Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always by my good friend and partner in radio, Ronald J. Martin. And Big R, it's just the two of us today. It's like the old reformatory days, baby, hearkening back to a simpler time in television and internet media. Back when you and I were living the dream in the Manhattan of East Central Indiana, Fort Wayne. Those were some magical years. But baby, this is a magical year in that I'm sitting here in my studio just overwhelmed by the powerful smell of leather. And I'm looking over my shoulder at this bag that I got to be honest with you, baby. Like for the last couple of weeks, I've been trying to be the kind of man who's worthy of this bag. You know what I mean?
It's a hard place to get to, and you're probably even afraid to take it out of the house at this point.
Maybe it's out of the house. I've been taking it to work. I feel
but
like
it just doesn't. You really haven't formed yourself around it yet, have you? Is that what it is?
It's the kind of bag. You know what? It makes me better. I feel like it makes me better as a person.
It's the one bag to which nobody can say you're better than that.
That's it, man. That's it. So I'm trying to live up to the grandeur of this bag, and I'm of course talking about the great company Saddleback Leather, with whom we have a business relationship now, Ronald. And before yes. I get into the parameters, the ins and outs of that relationship, I want you to talk to me about some of the Saddleback products that you're enjoying.
Yeah, so I think I have. What was the name of your bag? Because I think I have the same
bag. Dude, it's called the Flight Bag.
Yeah,
which was kind of an homage to my pops because my dad was a pilot for many, many years. So yeah, this reminds me of the original Big T.
Yeah, and so I got the Flight Bag. Like I got it like about a year and a half ago when they first announced it, mm-hmm. and they had a deal on it. Mm. So I was able to pay only I think $4,500.
There you go.
Like,
wow,
$5,100.
You only had to take two extra mortgages out on your house
Exactly.
In Ashland. Yeah, no, that's good.
And then I got a smaller version of it, which is really great because it's lighter and I can fit in just like my phone,
nice.
My charger, and a couple of other things like a notepad kind of a thing.
There you go, baby.
And then Big M, we got her like the what did we get you? Which one did we order for you? It's like the leather chestnut backpack, and dude, this piece is beauteous, man. Just beautiful. I mean, I can almost smell it right now, and it's like in a closet halfway across the room.
Dude, right, man. Like, I walk into my hallway at work, and literally, like, no exag, I can smell this thing from down the hall.
Absolutely,
and it just makes
man. It's, yeah.
It makes my heart leap with joy, baby. So
yeah, it's not Union College, man. It's like Saddleback College.
It's Saddleback University at this point. Like, they're just taking over. But, baby, I want to tell our listeners about a special offer that they can get through Saddleback. So if they visit saddlebackleather.com/happyrant, so we have our own dedicated page in the Saddleback Leather universe. So if they go to saddlebackleather.com/happyrant, they can sign up for a giveaway of 5 different items. And this giveaway is open through the end of October. They can also find the link at happyrantpodcast.com. So Saddleback, purveyors of fine leather goods. So they have shoulder bags. They have luggage. They have backpacks, very high-end backpacks, high-end wallets. Unbelievable stuff. Really fine craftsmanship and engineering goes into each of these products. They are, just in the interest of full disclosure, Ronald, they are unspeakably expensive. Okay, so...
Oh, 100%, right.
In the
but
same way...
But you get what you pay for,
dude, you get what you
right?
pay so if you for, want, yeah.
If you want a forever bag, if you want like an over-engineered, eternal, like I'm going to have this thing. Like I'm, you know, someday, you know, for everybody that ever dreamed of being Indiana Jones and having one of those bags that just gets all worn in because of all the trips you took overseas, you can have one by going to saddlebackleather.com.
Baby, has a college professor ever looked sexier in a movie than Indiana Jones?
Oh, my goodness.
I feel like that movie did more for the,
for
the academic field than anything I've ever seen. I mean, just unbelievable.
I mean, it makes me want to wear khakis every time I watch it. But then I remember what I do, and then I remember, so it's different when I wear khakis in my vocation than when Indiana wore them.
Dude, has there ever been a movie that's glamorized pastors? I feel like pastors always just get crapped on in movies just because Hollywood's so anti that. But
yeah, for sure. I mean, there was that movie that came out. I never saw it. It was with Ethan Hawke last year. It was called First Reformed.
Baby, that thing is hot garbage. It's so
bad. Oh, you saw it.
Yeah, it's
really?
so bad. It's really... And hear this, man. Hear this, everyone. I love Ethan Hawke. I love Ethan Hawke. I love the 90s. He was Mr. 90s. He's been in so many great films. But this was a film made by...
That was
by,
not it, huh?
No, this one was made by Paul Schrader, the taxi driver guy. And he's a West Michigan guy. So, like, born and raised in West Michigan, and really in the way of most West Michiganders, like, super angry at the church. And he's kind of still in that, like...
So he's an anti-church guy making a church movie. That's weird. That never happens.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like all anti-church guys who grew up either in, like, the Bible Belt South or in Grand Rapids, they have to make their, like... anti-church magnum opus.
But then you get a guy that likes church, and then you got like a Kirk Cameron movie. Like, there's no in between. Like, we can't.
Maybe we like church. We could make the in between. You know?
Can we bridge the gap?
I would love to bridge the gap.
That's what's crazy.
So if anybody wants to finance that, like movie studio executives, if you're listening, and I know you are,
For sure.
Fund our movie.
Second Reformed.
Yeah, Second Reformed the sequel. First Reformed 2, Second Reformed. I love it. Well, baby, it's apropos that we are talking about movies, because I want to pivot into a movie discussion, and I want to give the listeners a little glimpse into our process. So for every artist kind of has a process that they get into before they create. And for us, that included looking at the potential topics for this podcast and throwing all of them out. When we found out Piper wasn't going to be on the program, we both had that moment of realization where we realized... I don't care about any of these topics necessarily, but there's one thing that you and I care deeply about, baby, and it's Downton Abbey. Okay, so for those who aren't familiar, Downton Abbey was a long-running dramatic series on PBS, Masterpiece Classics, Downton Abbey, and it was appointment viewing at our house. It was like, to me, one of the last shows that happened on real TV, like right before the streaming boom, like really hit. And it was one that we would kind of race home on like Sunday evenings to watch Downton Abbey, and it was an appointment thing for us. And I turned off Super Bowls for it. I turned off like Sunday night NFL games for it. It was a big deal. So I know you were also stoked to see the movie, the feature length film that just dropped, and we both went to see it independent of one another. But I can't wait to hear your take on it, baby, because we kind of teased some of this off the air. So why don't you give me first, I want to know the context that you saw the movie in. Did you see it with friends? Did you see it just with Big M or by yourself? And what were your expectations going in?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So here's the deal. There's like sort of we've sort of formed a Downton Club at Substance Church.
Good. Yeah.
So this is a small group of people that are... probably, maybe, if not, you know, to the extreme that I am, pretty devoted to DA.
Yeah.
And so we put together a big group, and by big group I mean like about 7 or 8 of us, and we went to the theater and we saw Downton Abbey on Saturday night.
Yeah.
And so we also do this thing when we're not watching the movie, because we start the series every like fall now.
Sure.
And so we invite people over and we just run through the series together, and we do like a Downton night.
It's so good.
And people come over and we just make some food. It's just super fun. Mm-hmm. Watch a couple eps. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what we did. We grabbed some of those people and we went and we saw the movie. Now, I'll be honest with you, man. Yeah. So here's where I'm at with it.
Yeah.
You know, I did not have, and I'm just saying, I don't want to bum anybody out, but I did not have great expectations for the movie.
Yeah.
I wasn't really thinking much about it, to be honest.
Sure.
I was excited that it was coming out. But again, it makes me less excited that the series is now over, because there's nothing to keep continuing on after the movie. So it kind of just bums me out a little bit in general, because I wish it was still a series.
Mm-hmm.
So when I go in, going into the movie, I'm thinking, well, this is just a one-off, and knowing it's a one-off, they got to tie everything up at the end. I understand that. And then at the end of the day, it's hard for me, because when I saw what the premise was on the trailer, it was just that the king and queen were coming over. I was kind of like, this just feels like season 4, episode 6.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, and
so I went into it. Yeah. I went into it thinking kind of, I went into it like not super excited based on the premise.
Yeah. And also because they really tied everything up neatly in the series. There was almost, in a sense, like nothing left to resolve. And 100%. So my assessment of the movie, and I actually wrote about it when I got home. It was one of those movies that, like, I knew it really wouldn't be over for me until I wrote about it. And my assessment of it was that it was a great experience, but a bad movie. And what I mean by that is, so Double K and I, we actually dressed up, right? So that day I taught classes, and I wore a blue velvet sport jacket that I have.
Wow.
And I wore it with an ascot. So I've got an ascot.
Wow.
I got the blue velvet jacket. KK wore a little flapper dress. And we went out to dinner. Had a little...
You guys just did it up.
Dude, we did it up. We had a little sush A little
sushi. It's like dinner theater.
Yeah,
basically.
It's like dinner theater. So we had a little sushi, and then we went to the theater where it was me, Double K, and like a dozen old ladies in this huge theater. It was fantastic. And old ladies are so polite and like none of the
usual.
It was
a beautiful experience.
Yeah, none of the
sure.
usual like dirtbaggery that happens in movie theaters. We didn't have to worry about any of that. And so it was a great experience in the sense that it delivered lots of the big like sweeping drone shots of the castle. And there were a couple just money to me shots like Carson and Mrs. Hughes walking off into the sunset like triumphantly out the front door at the end was so good.
They made some big statements that really fit the big screen.
They did, man. And so it delivered on that level. But, dude, to me, the story was non-existent. To me, baby, they took, like, the two or three least interesting characters in the entire history of the series and just leaned into them and gave them way too much screen time. And then there were other characters like Bates. Like, I was a big Bates and Anna guy. And Bates was barely on screen. He was on screen for like 35 seconds, like holding a kid.
They didn't do anything with Bates. Remember that one scene where he's holding his son?
Yeah.
His young son. I mean, he was literally almost non-existent.
He was non-existent in this. And so they took this incredible big ensemble cast that we had grown to know and love, and they pivoted away from that, and they introduced like six new people that nobody cares about. You know what I mean? So like the whole royal family thing was a big deal. There was the cousin from like parts unknown with all the money who came back, and it was kind of the typical like, are we going to get a piece of the action inheritance wise? Which I feel was that was sort of the driving moment in at least half the episodes in the regular series.
Baby. And here was so strange. I wanted to ask you about that because where did that even... That felt like so, like, just off the beaten path.
Yeah, dude, it was so strange to me. It hadn't...
Like, I barely still even understand what was happening with that.
Baby, so I want to run a scenario by you. This is the storyline that I feel like they should have leaned into hard. And I feel like it would have been beautiful and elegant and meaningful for people. But they did nothing with it. And it's as follows. So remember Barrow, Thomas Barrow, the kind of dirtbaggy, skeevy, butler guy who took over for Carson at the very end, because the implication at the very end of the series was that Carson was like having tremors, having health issues. And so Thomas stepped in to become the butler of Downton, which was a huge deal.
It was big.
Now, to me, it would have made all the sense in the world to make the movie about whether or not Thomas can like succeed in filling the shoes of Carson. You know, Carson was this legend in the industry, this legend at Downton, ran the place with an iron fist, was amazing. I'm a huge Carson guy, by the way. Love Carson. But Barrow, man, they did the kind of yawn, check your watch, the typical 2019 gay guy thing where like a gay guy can only ever be a gay guy in the movie. Like he can't have like a real vibrant storyline that has anything to do with anything else. So they just gave Barrow like 20 minutes where he was like, being a gay guy, and that was all they gave him. But to me, that would have been the most interesting storyline in the whole thing. It would have been absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, no, I think you're onto something with that. I think the pressure, obviously the pressure was we got to bring Carson back in.
Mm-hmm.
So the pressure was like, how do we get, now that Carson's retired, how do we bring him back into the story? Because he's one of the most popular characters, and we got to bring him back in. But the way they did it, in my opinion, felt so unrealistic and flimsy.
Well, in part because, if Carson's body and his health was breaking down at the end of the old series, like, they didn't even acknowledge that at all. It was just
right, he wasn't shaking.
Hey, Carson's back. He's healthy, everybody. He's going to sweep in and save the day, Which I was thrilled to see Carson. Don't get me wrong. That was really fun.
Of course.
Dude, here's another issue I had with the movie. And I want to get your take on this character from the series. I thought one of the most boring, aggravating characters in the whole series was Tom Branson. I was not a Tom Branson guy. He just struck me as very like whiny and one-dimensional and kind of boring. But they turned Tom Branson into like the guy that everybody went to for advice. In that, he single-handedly, and this is spoilers, I guess, but it's not spoilers because there's really no story that anyone would care about. But he single-handedly like saves the royal family based on one like 6-minute inane conversation with the queen's daughter.
Right.
Yeah, so Tom Branson's just walking around like spitting wisdom through the movie, and you're
which
just
is kind
like,
of what he did during the series. I mean, really, that was his role in the series. That ended up becoming his role.
It kind of became his role, but it was always really one dimensional. It was always really like you never really bought it, or at least I never really bought it. Were you a Branson guy during the series?
I mean, I probably liked him more than you did, mm-hmm. but I was, I'll tell you what, I was fascinated that he became one of the main characters, because yeah. early on, you would have never guessed that in mm-hmm. a thousand years. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, so whether you love him or hate him, it's kind of fascinating that,
totally.
that the writer just sort of put him in the mix, you know what I mean? And again, all that stuff with Sybil and Matthew dying in the yeah. series, I mean, that obviously changed the game of the whole series.
Dude, totally. They're like, we got to elevate Branson. You know, it's next man up. We got to take a reliever and make him a starter, you know? We got to bring him out of the bullpen and put him into the rotation.
Pretty much. I mean, that's exactly what happened, too. Yeah. It was weird because Branson as the chauffeur, I mean, there was nothing about his character that felt like he was going to emerge as sort of one of the main stars.
Yeah.
I mean, arguably, like, him and Mary are the two main stars of were the two main stars of the series.
Dude, which is crazy because I feel like Mary totally deserves it. I feel like Mary was fascinating.
Sort of the villainous.
Dude, she was villainous, but she was so complex and layered and multidimensional. Yes. Whereas I feel like Branson was the opposite of all those things. And Sybil really was too. Like, Sybil was super boring. I liked her. Again, like, likable character, but really one-dimensional, super boring.
I honestly felt that way about, I know this is blasphemous, I felt that way about Matthew.
Dude, okay, so I'm glad you said that. I totally felt that way the first time through. But as we've been rewatching the series, my appreciation of Matthew has grown.
It's grown?
Yeah, because I feel like there's a lot of him kind of swimming upstream in those early episodes and him kind of finding this balance between not selling out, okay? So, like, not selling out all of his idealism and his beliefs, but also really kind of growing to love and embrace the Downton Abbey lifestyle.
Yes.
And yes. I feel like that complexity in Matthew was something I kind of missed the first time around. And, you know, just him going to war, him almost getting blown up, you know.
Because, you know, what's so funny, because you forget, that's so interesting, because I the first time through, I really disliked season two, the war season.
Yeah, yeah.
And I felt like it just took us away from what Downton really was and how they established themselves the first season, right?
Right.
But you go back now, and I think you're totally on point, because Matthew's time in the war, it kind of gave him sort of the deep and rich character that he ended up having, you know, until his, you know, an untimely death.
Dude, it gave him some grit. It gave him some gravitas.
It gave him some grit.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, for sure. But again, I do think, I mean, and this is where we might differ.
Yeah.
I loved Mary for how complex her character was, but I hated Mary's character. And so there's a part of me that, like, that almost judged Matthew poorly for falling in love with somebody like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, something about it. For somebody like that to fall in love with somebody like that, you have to kind of wonder about that. About
Dude, yeah. And you kind of wondered at times, or at least I did, like, what does he see in Mary? You know?
100%.
What does he see in Mary? Because Matthew seemed like, by comparison, such a soft-hearted, kind of innocent dude compared to, you know, the level of conniving that you got on an episode-by-episode basis from Mary.
Because it, yeah, absolutely. And in fact, like, if you really look at Matthew's character and Mary's character, if you just put them each in their own room, like you would never put them together.
Yeah.
Like, it makes no sense that they would have been together, because she wouldn't have liked somebody like that, and he would have never liked somebody like that.
Yeah, exactly, right? Exactly.
At the end of the day.
So let's go into a little side category. I want to know from you, you can either go series or movie or both, your favorite upstairs character and your favorite downstairs character from either the series or the movie.
Oh, man, that's a big one. That's a real big one. I think if I had to Desert Island a couple of those characters.
Desert Island favorite characters.
Yeah, Desert Island abs is what we'll call it, man.
Yeah.
I would say downstairs for me, at the end of the day, I was always most excited when Bates was on screen.
Bates is fascinating.
I just love Bates. To me, that's the character right there.
Dude, so much death, so much grit, so much gravitas. Yeah.
Yeah, just incredible to me. Just, I mean, and not like a classically, like, Hollywood leading man character.
Yeah,
but arguably, like, really, I mean, you could, if somebody said, "Hey, Ronnie," at the end of the day, Bates is the leading man of Downton. It's hard to argue,
dude. And Bates was so great too, because he wasn't he's not a conventionally handsome guy by Hollywood standards, but he's very compelling looking. And he just had this, like, depth of character and kind of the whole Still Waters Run Deep thing. He didn't say a lot, but when he spoke, it mattered.
I know. And then having that, I mean, just every time him and Anna, I mean, it was like the Greek tragedy of their lives, man. That's all it was, man. Yeah. Never, almost until the last episode, everything perpetually went wrong for them.
Oh,
right?
I know it, dude. I know it.
So, I mean, that's why, and I love Anna too. So I loved them as a pair. I loved Bates specifically upstairs. Mm-hmm. That's a great question. I think at the end of the day, if I'm upstairs, I have to go. You know, it's probably between Lord Grantham and the Dowager Countess. Oh, I mean, you know, without Maggie Smith, there is no Downton Abbey.
Dude, she's the straw that stirs the drink. Definitely,
100%. But Lord Grantham, I mean, to me, every time he was on the screen, man, I loved seeing him. I loved hearing him. I loved his reactions to things. I loved the short temper.
Yeah,
but I loved like the restraint.
Yes,
that he had,
dude.
Too.
Dude, the restraint is so cool. And I think it's because we live in a culture with no restraint. We live in a culture where nobody dresses up, nobody holds their tongue, everybody says everything. Everybody says it in like the most crass sort of hot takey way possible. Mm-hmm. And I think that show was just a 60-minute departure into a world of nuance and restraint, which like the show itself provides an unbelievable foil to like what we're wading through culturally right now. And yeah, I think for me, like upstairs, it's Lord Grantham. You know, as I watch through it, I find myself relating to him on so many levels, and not because I am a royal person with all kinds of money, but just
because you're wearing your ascot every day.
Not because I'm wearing the ascot every day, baby, and I'm not, to be clear. But I think because when you get to be our age, you just have so much crap that you're responsible for. And Grantham did a great job of like portraying that he kind of had the weight of the world on his shoulders, but also not whining about it. He was never kind of woe is me about it. Any problem solved really well, but he was real and vulnerable too in that, and he had his moments of like,
I mean,
moral failure,
for sure.
You know,
yeah, no, for sure. But I'll tell you what I loved about him was like there was always these like what would Lord Grantham do moments,
yeah,
and like Lord Grantham is a guy that makes every man a better man,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
No, I think so.
To even have situations, if you watch the show as much as we do, right, there's like situations that come up in your life. And I don't know if you've ever had one of those moments where you think, dude, I wonder how he would react to this. And then you try to react the way Lord Grantham would react.
Dude, totally. Yeah. Like he gets some horrible bit of bad news. And like, I know what my knee-jerk reaction is in those moments.
Yeah.
But yeah, every once in a while, I'm like, huh, I wonder how Lord Grantham would play this, you know?
Yeah, LGD.
WWLGD. We need to get those bracelets printed, man. Some little rubber bracelets. I love it.
Absolutely.
Favorite downstairs character for me, this is well documented, Mrs. Patmore. I love me some Mrs. Patmore. She's an angel to me. And Ronald, I got to tell you, they did something in the movie that I got really momentarily excited about, and then they dropped it. Do you remember the scene where Mrs. Patmore goes to the market to pick up the groceries for the dinner that they're preparing for the royals? And she walks in and she starts to have this banter with this guy who's like age appropriate. He's in the same like looks league as Mrs. Patmore. I'm a big believer in leagues and the league system. I know you are too. Like, so they're in the same league. He's age appropriate. He seems really nice, and he seems like he's kind of showing off for her a little bit. And he's kind of trying to woo Mrs. Patmore, and I got so
excited. Like, you kind of thought there was something going on. There was something going on.
Yeah, dude. So I was like, finally, they're going to let Mrs. Patmore find love, and it's going to be so exciting and so satisfying for me. And then they just dropped it. And
I think you bring up a good point with that, and I'm with you. I love Mrs. Patmore.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely one of the highlight characters.
Totally.
I think the problem with the movie in general was they had a few of those moments that had to get dropped because they obviously didn't have the time to develop that storyline because it's only one movie instead of like season 8 or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I think that was part of the disappointment is that as much as they tied everything up at the end of the series, there were things like Mrs. Patmore that technically weren't tied up.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, they just didn't
do
anything with it.
Yeah. So right. So I mean, I don't know, should they have spent the movie tying up more of those storylines? But then, you know, at the end of the day, Mrs. Patmore is not the most popular character, so they have to go after that.
Totally.
And
dude, and maybe so at the end of the day, Barrow isn't the most popular character either. But I just think it would have been the most interesting storyline to have him trying to be the next Carson, and maybe having Carson come alongside him in sort of a, like, Rocky kind of Creed partnership in that he's kind of training him, and it almost becomes a sports movie at that point. it would have been amazing. But I kind of wanted to see Barrow crush it. I wanted to see him triumph and do a good job.
Yeah, because they kind of put him in a situation where they had to bring Carson back.
Yeah.
And then he kind of backed out, and then he had sort of the whole, like, you know, love affair thing happen.
Yeah.
And so you really didn't get anything out of it. And I just felt like, man, I felt like whatever it was, like the writing, it just felt like they didn't know who to emphasize.
Yeah.
They didn't know, like, what storyline they needed to bring out the most.
Yeah.
And it just lacked so much focus to me.
Totally, totally. Now, what they did do well, I thought, was the last, like, 15 minutes.
100%. So, yeah. This is what I told my group, because they asked me, and they're all loving it. And I'm like, you know what? I'm like, I don't want to be the downer right now.
Yeah.
I go, it sounds like a real, to me, it was kind of a mediocre episode.
Yeah.
Of just a regular episode at some point
yep.
in the season. And I said, the other thing about it is there was no emotion. There was no emotional content in the movie until
totally.
That last 15 minutes.
Totally, totally.
It was devoid of emotion.
Dude, I agree. And there was so much potential for good emotion. I mean, they could have really done some things emotionally with it that they left on the table. You know, they just left a lot. There was a lot of meat left on that bone at the end. And, you know, they did do a nice job. They gave us the Carson and Hughes moment at the end. They gave the Dowager Countess Mary moment, in which they have been building toward Mary in all ways, kind of becoming the next Dowager Countess. You know, like, ostensibly in another 30 years, like, she'll be saying the zingers and, like, hobbling around ruling everybody with an iron fist, which is a fun thing, right? Like, as an audience, we like that. But yeah, Edith didn't get a whole lot of screen time. I'm an Edith guy. Poor Edith just got, like, crapped on for pretty much the balance of the whole series until right at the end they started to, like, let Edie turn things around. But the other prevailing kind of emotion that I had as I was watching it, and I was watching it both as a real fan of the series, but also as a screenwriter and you know, somebody who, like, teaches that, it just occurred to me while watching, they just killed too many people off. You know, like, I was watching it going, I wish Matthew was a part of this, or, like, even Sybil, as boring as she was, like, I kind of wish she was back and a part of it. And I know it's, like, contractual, and they thought they were going to be movie stars, and there were all kinds of reasons why they left the series, but
totally.
It had too many bodies. Like, there were too many people in it, but they weren't the right people. And,
right.
Like, when Mary's quote-unquote husband shows up at the end, like, the race car guy... Like
what he, was that?
Yeah,
that, like, was the most baffling part of the movie.
Right, he comes cruising up at the end of the movie, and I literally leaned over to KK, and I'm like, oh, that guy. Like, that guy exists. Like,
yeah.
Until that point, like, I had no idea. I'd forgotten that Mary was married. You know, like, I forgot she had a husband.
I mean, that scene, I looked over at Big M, and I'm just like, was this the only day he was available, and it was, like, the last day of shooting?
Oh, dude, right. So it's like a half-day shoot for that guy. You
totally.
Know? Yeah, I mean, it's so easy.
Yeah, that made no sense. Like, that was another one of those things where you're just like, dude, I have no idea what anybody's thinking with
yeah,
this right now.
Yeah, like, here's a guy we don't care about who's married
to
Mary.
Yeah, and we didn't even care about him when he was in – I mean, he did not play a big role in anything until the end when he married Mary, obviously. But yeah, I think that was that kind of that there was that sense of disconnect all the way through, like that.
Yeah.
You know, where, like, you just – I mean, it definitely kept you on your toes because the whole thing was so discombobulated. You didn't really know what was going to happen next. And you were kind of surprised all the way through it.
Yeah.
You were surprised by almost like just sort of you were surprised by the lack of surprise.
Yeah.
Because every time something happened, it would be like, why would they do that? Why did they do that?
Dude, here's another like choice that they made that I totally didn't get. But it did provide the one scene in the movie that was kind of exciting. But it was a totally, like, it was almost like a screwball, like, 80s comedy scene. It was the whole Mr. Mosley thing.
Totally.
Mosley was cringy. He was this, like, third or fourth tier character in the series that you were always kind of, like, rolling your eyes at. But they gave him, like, half the movie. Like, half the movie was about Mosley.
Seriously.
I'm like, what are we even doing here? This guy, like, nobody cared about him on the series. And he kind of does that cringy, like, screwball 80s comedy moment where he's serving dinner. And, it was just weird, man. I didn't hate that scene, but it was just a weird moment.
No, I know, but it felt, like, wasted to me because I was talking to somebody about this, and it was like when they have to make like a feature length of something like that, I feel like what they do is they take everybody's character and they make them the most exaggerated version of themselves. So like the Dowager Countess, her entire dialogue was just one liners.
Yeah.
You know, dropping those like funny, sarcastic, outrageous one liners. Mosley, who is just kind of like this goofy guy that's all fingers and thumbs. They just completely exaggerate that.
Yeah.
You know, you got Tom Branson, who's like the real level headed guy.
Yeah.
All he's doing is dropping wisdom.
Dude, it's caricatures. Flat one dimensional caricatures for the movie when what made the series so brilliant was the opposite, right? So in the series you had these really sort of impeccably drawn characters with multi-dimensions, and like Barrow being the great example of that, right? So he starts out as kind of this villainous dirtbag, and then by the end of the series he's sympathetic. And you know, there were all kinds of characters like that. I think Mary had the opposite arc. Like Mary started out very dirtbag and villainous, and then as the series went on you were kind of like more on board with her. Like I think you started to appreciate everything she had to deal with, and you saw that she was kind of a mashup of the good qualities of her dad and the Dowager Countess.
No, she was. And I mean, I think that's a good point. What's interesting about Mary is they had nothing to villainize her with in the movie.
Yeah.
So she was completely vanilla.
She was.
All the way through.
Yeah, she was vanilla. And really, like, her only function was to sort of trail Barrow. Or not Barrow, Branson. Because remember, you had that whole thing like, oh, is Branson is he going to try to bomb the royal family or do some
goofy
protest move,
which again was totally like that was Barrow, like that, I mean that was Branson like 10 years ago,
dude, right? But Branson had already like dealt with all that stuff, you know what I mean?
Right.
Branson was no longer like the angry college sophomore that
the revolutionary
he was a middle-aged guy with kids and a level head by that point, but
yeah, he's not the guy that's gonna like kneel during the national anthem, you know, and
they put him
into that total situation.
Oh, I love it.
Crazy.
Man. I love it. Thoroughly enjoyed it, though. Like, even though it was bad, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was sort of like, did you ever watch wrestling as a kid? Do you ever go through, like, a wrestling
phase? I never did, man. I never did.
Yeah, I equated it to, like, there's this wrestler, the Nature Boy Ric Flair, who was a huge star in, like, the 80s and a little bit of the 90s. But for the last decade, even though Ric Flair is, like, 70, they still put a robe on him once a year, and they, like, trot him out, and they bring him down the aisle, and they let him, quote-unquote, wrestle a match that goes, like, a minute and a half, and he does, like, one thing, and then it's over. But everybody loves it because it's Ric Flair. And you get to see him in the costume, and you get to see him say his, like, signature line, and that's what this movie was, I think. It was just, like, one more chance to see everybody in the costumes and do their lines. And, dude, the Downton Abbey movie, to me, it could have been 2.5 hours of just Carson and Hughes living their lives. I would watch that.
Yeah, 100%.
Dude, I would watch them, like, tending their garden and walking to the
totally.
Market.
Literally doing nothing.
Like, I want to see what their evenings look like. Like, what's an evening like for Carson and Hughes? You know, are they reminiscing? Are they talking about, like, the old days at Downton? Or, you know?
Yeah, there's no television. They're not watching Downton
Abbey.
There's no TV.
They're reading, or they're
they're not watching Masterpiece Classics.
Dude,
man.
I know. So I was kind of hoping in the movie theater they would drop the whole... Remember the Laura Linney intro?
Oh, I would love... I love the Laura... It's not Downton until I see Laura.
Dude,
I know it.
And
this is Masterpiece Classic.
I know, and I so wished that they would have like just dropped that onto the beginning, but they didn't.
I talked to somebody... So this is interesting, man. I want to get your take on this.
Yeah.
I talked to somebody who was... a couple people, actually, who are convinced that they left it wide open for Downton feature film number 2.
Yeah, I think so, man. I they're not wrong. Like, I mean, I think there just wasn't...
And it's crushed it at the box office, too. It's done really well.
Yeah, dude. I mean, so many people love the thing. So, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if they did another one, honestly. And they could kind of keep unraveling the ball of yarn that is Mary's character and what becomes of Downton. And the really interesting thing about a context like Downton... And they did a wise thing by leaning into this during the series, even, was just the whole motif of what happens to this as the world gets more modern And mm-hmm. as more people get more at odds with, like, the divide between rich and poor and the whole, like, mm-hmm. quote-unquote, we would call it social justice thing. I don't know what
which
they
Which was always
then,
the theme going
yeah,
through it.
It was kind of the theme. It was, yeah. like, the world's changing. You know, I remember when they got their first, like, phone, when they got their first radio, right? So they're getting all wigged out by this technology.
Electricity.
Yeah, cars. Like, when Matthew rolled up in the car for the first time, it was a huge deal. Yeah. So I think they could keep going with that. I mean, they could just keep walking that out.
How do we, though, here's my problem, my question, though, man, is how do we have Downton without Maggie Smith? And they set that one up pretty badly for her continuing.
Dude, they did. You know? Yeah, yeah. And she must have made it clear, like, I don't want to
do
this.
Like, this is it.
Yeah, I'm
done.
Not doing another one of these. And
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, they set that. They were clear on that. But, I mean, I don't know how, I mean, she is like central to almost every scene and almost every character she plays.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how important her character is where everybody else's character almost needs her character to be who they are.
Yeah, she was such a force. It was almost like, it was like the Bulls when Jordan retired for a minute the first time. And like, you would watch the Bulls and you'd see them in their red jerseys and you go, well, technically that's the Bulls, but like, where's Jordan, you know?
Yeah, and even I know enough about that to know that.
Yeah, right? so it's like you're not watching a Bulls game when Jordan's off playing baseball. You're watching something else. So,
right.
So, yeah, I don't know.
It's
going to
be tough.
Yeah, I don't
it's
know how they
tough.
Replace that sizzle, you know? She was just
Because then you got Mrs. I'm sorry, you got Isabel.
Yeah.
You got Cousin Isabel. So what is Cousin Isabel without the Dowager Countess? You know
Dude,
what
now
I mean?
Cousin
like,
Isabel.
How does that even work?
She's brilliant. She's a
I
she's
love
a
Cousin
great,
Isabel. One of my favorite.
Dude,
one
she's a
favorite.
Great actress. She has a great face for what they were does. Asking her to do. She was the ultimate, like... Cause
she's
her,
brilliant.
Yeah, her smugness matched that of the Dowager Countess. It was just
totally.
It was a different brand of smugness.
It was a different vein of smugness.
It was a different
right.
vein of smugness, and it was really fun to watch. So, yeah, if you don't have the Dowager, like... Who are you being smug at if you're her? Yeah, there's
I don't know.
There's a lot of problems
know,
they're going to have to address, man, and just a lot of issues they'll have to kind of spin out there if they do another one of these. But
why did they? What did we find out? Here's what's interesting, man. Yeah. So let's go back to this for our final minutes here. But I always think it's fascinating when you have a show that like hits it way bigger than anybody thought.
Yeah,
and then you have some of its stars bowing out early because they think they have the big film career, and then they don't have the big film career, right?
Yeah,
so we're talking like Matthew, we're talking Sybil, like it didn't really happen for them.
Yeah.
And so it's fascinating to think like what would have happened, number one, if they would have stayed, and number two, why did they end the series?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because I think the series was still popping. It was still like
totally
drawing a whole bunch of viewers and making money or whatever, however you make money at PBS. But yeah, it was really successful, and yeah, it's funny. Like I could have, this is easy for me to say, and you probably agree, but I feel like I could have told you from a mile away that Matthew wasn't going to be a movie star. Like he just doesn't have leading man qualities, but he's not like ugly and quirky enough to be a character actor. So there's kind of no place for him in the movies. You know, he's not Brad Pitt, so he's not going to be doing leading man stuff. But
I would say even more accurate, he's like not Hugh Grant. And like everybody's looking for the next Hugh Grant. And it's like that was a long time ago.
Totally.
Having that major romantic English, you know, like leading man. He's not that either. But
no, totally not. So yeah, like I feel like his agent should have said, look, you know, lean into this Downton Abbey thing, ride this pony for as long as it lasts. And, you know, maybe they wrapped it Big R because they realized they killed off too many characters and there were too many characters that nobody cared about anymore. And they kind of just tied it off. And I want to talk about the last episode of the series because I know there was some like critical pushback on that. I loved it. I love that they sort of tied everything off with a bow and gave everybody a happy ending. And like even
I thought it was great.
I thought it was great too. Really even good. Edith's life stopped sucking for a minute and they gave her kind of a happy thing. And
Edith kind of becomes like the ruler of like, you know, the ruler of England, basically, you know, at the end of the series. I mean, you know, commentators will tell you, people that write about Downton will say, actually, the entire series was about Edith.
Yeah.
If you break it down.
That's fascinating. Yeah. That's
there's
fascinating.
Like theories about like really Downton. If you were to tell somebody in like if you had 1 minute to talk about Downton Abbey, they would say it all boils down to Edith and what happened to Edith.
Dude, I love that there's like Downton Abbey scholars out there.
Absolutely.
We need to become those. Like I'm an academia.
I believe we are
like,
those.
I can BS my way into being a Downton Abbey scholar.
Dude, do you think Union would ever want to do like a Downton Abbey like
like elective,
like a visiting professor.
Like you can bring me out, and then yeah. we can literally like vamp on it for like an hour.
Yeah, dude, we could be professors in residence of Downton Abbey. We can do a whole semester, you know.
And we could like we could go in costume and the whole
thing. Dude, I remember when. Do you remember the movie The Big Lebowski, the bowling yeah. movie? Dude, I remember there were like. You know, a smug, like, English profs back in the day who were like, I'm going to make a whole career out of Big Lebowski, you know, and like,
yeah.
postmodernism in the Big Lebowski, and they're writing these white papers, and they're writing these, like, quote-unquote books that four people read, and, like, I know guys who made careers out of the Big Lebowski.
Oh, dude, Big Lebowski was, like, a cultural moment.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's a cultural moment if, like, academics are finding a way to BS a career out of it.
Yeah.
And I wonder if we could do the same thing for Downton. Nothing would make me happier.
I mean, I think the problem with that is like finding like college kids that are interested
yeah.
in Downton Abbs.
Dude, and there aren't many, man. I can tell you there aren't too many. Because I've been trying to talk about it in my classes and
they're not having it. It's falling on deaf ears, isn't it? I mean, you're just like you're struggling, aren't
Dude,
you?
Dude, I'm struggling. It's falling on deaf ears and I'm like I gotta go.
Have you met one student that has seen the movie?
Dude, a couple. Yeah, a couple okay.
But they're not even like that invested, right?
No, they're not that invested. They don't care.
They had to go because they were going with somebody who made them go. And
yeah, you know. Yeah, that kind of thing, man. I mean, there's not, and at the risk of sounding like an 85-year-old man here, I mean, I think our college students are like most where, like if they're going to the movies, they're going to see a Marvel, you know, adaptation or, you know, they're going to see some big kind of.
Well, I hope not, because there's not a lot of those movies being made right now, baby. I mean, they're going to be waiting a long time to see another Marvel. Oh, they just saw three of them today.
Yeah, they just saw three of them last week. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of demand in that age group for dresses and English nobility.
It's a more refined movie experience.
Maybe it's like being a cat owner. It's a more refined way of living life, you know?
You know what? And why don't we wrap this up, why don't we compare that mm-hmm. the way it needs to be compared, with Downton being what cat owners...
Dude, Downton is the house cat of movies, you know?
It's 100%
the house quiet, cat. It's quiet, it's pleasant to look at. It's not demanding. It doesn't demand a whole
it's
lot
not
of
demanding.
You, but
it's have to earn its love.
Yeah, you kind of have to earn its affection. Like, nobody in that movie was giving their affection away easily,
besides
Sybil.
No.
I mean, <Yeah. laughs> you know, Sybil, you just wave like a wrench and a, you know, some rebellion in front of her and she's in. She's charging at it like a bull.
She's in.
Yeah, she's in. But the rest of them, you know, you kind of had to earn it. And I think that's what's great about the show. So
yeah, man. Downton Abbey, man. It's the cat of television shows.
The cat of TV. This is the cat. I feel like
the
happy
kitty cat
rant,
of all. Yeah.
The happy rant, and specifically this episode, is the kitty cat of podcasts.
How badly... Let's just talk about this for 1 second, just for the sake of our fans. How badly is Pipe going to hate this app?
Dude, Piper's going to go through the roof when he realizes we went off script and we just talked Downton Abbey and house cats for 45 minutes.
This could literally this could chase him out of the rant. I mean, he might just never come back.
Do you feel like it could drive him away from the rant?
I think it could drive him away. I mean, he could just be like, I can't do this. He might like call, he might get a hold of you on Monday and say, dude, we need to do like 16 sports apps like on Thursday.
Yeah, we need to go around the clock. We're going 24-hour sports apps, man, nonstop.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this is about the least Pipe app that we could have possibly done.
Dude, it really is. I want Pipe to like this, though. Like, I want him to give Downton Abbey a chance. Do you think Pipe's new... I don't know.
I know what you're going to say.
At risk of going too public, but Pipe's new association would... Do you think she's a Downton Abbey fan?
I think the problem with Pipe is he's like a 38-year-old going on 58-year-old guy.
Yeah.
And, like, I think he's, like, he's... He's the most, like, set in his ways 38-year-old, I think.
Dude, he's very set in his ways. Yeah, he's very, like,
yeah.
determined about his likes and dislikes. And
like, he knows where he's at. He knows what he likes. He knows what he doesn't like. And I think when we're doing, you know, episode, like, 2,516 in 20 years, like, Pipe's going to, like, nothing's going to have changed.
Yeah.
Like, Pipe's going to be Pipe. Pipe's going to Pipe, man. That's just what we know about Pipe.
Yeah. Yeah, he's going to be Pipe. Absolutely. He's that guy. So
you're not seeing Pipe at any point. So what we're not ever going to hear from Pipe, baby, is like him like getting on an ep one day and saying, dude, I just started season one of Downton Abbs. That's not going
to
happen.
He's not going to come to the Downton Abbs like theme party that we throw as a part of our next.
Oh, are you kidding? No. I mean, not even close.
Baby, we should do this as a part of our next live show. We should do an after party that's Downton Abbey themed.
A Downton Abbs themed after party.
Come dressed as your favorite character. We'll have some
absolutely
have some guys in tuxedos. serving dinner. You know,
like, that's like what a we gentleman. Need to do. And babe, you already have your ascot. You're ready to roll.
I got my ascot. I'm ready to roll. I got my dinner jacket. You know,
that's what I'm saying.
I'll have to have my footman like get some, you know, get some stains out of it, sew on some buttons. But I'll be ready to go, man.
Let me ask you this, man. Yeah. Was there ever an ep that you watched of Downton Abbey that you just didn't dream of having like 1 week in Lord Grantham's shoes?
Yes and no, in the sense that, and I think it's because of what we talked about before. Like, yes, on the level of, you know, you look at all the opulence and all the kind of, you know.
Yeah, just to have an experiential moment.
Just to have the experiential moment of, like, what would a day in this kind of context look like? But then realizing, wait a minute, I do have that experience because, and this is not unique, right? But I've got two kids who I'm constantly, like, problem solving for, and I'm their sounding board on stuff, and I got a wife, and same deal, you know, just regular like married couple stuff of talking about work and conflicts and interpersonal things that are happening with each of us, and then you realize like I am living that lifestyle, just minus the money and the fame and the opulence that Lord Grantham gets to enjoy each day, you know?
So it's everything like Downton except nothing like Downton on any level.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah. You take away all the money, all the fame, all the servants, all the prepared meals, and Lord Grantham and I are...
Baby, I love that. You're like, baby, the thing is my life is exactly like Downton with the exception of it's nothing like Downton on any level. So I'm perfectly satisfied with never walking 1 foot in Lord Grantham's shoes.
No, not one. Baby, can I say one more thing about the actor that portrays Lord Grantham?
Oh, dude, yeah.
He's in another one of my favorite British movies, and it's the movie Notting Hill. Have you seen Notting Hill?
I have, but I never knew he was in it.
Dude, charming little movie. So he plays Hugh Grant's, you know, it's kind of an ensemble, and Hugh Grant's got that big group of buddies. Yeah, and he plays this character called Bernie, who's like an unsuccessful like investment guy. And he walks into the dinner party, and they're like, "How was work, Bernie?" And he's like, "Oh, you know, millions down the drain, you know." And they're like, "Oh, well done, you know." And he has this great scene where he's opposite Julia Roberts. And in the movie, Julia Roberts plays a wildly successful actress. She's basically playing herself. And Bernie doesn't recognize who she is. And, you know, he asks her, he's like, "What do you do for a living?" And she's like, "I'm an actress." And he's like, "Oh, you know, the pay is scandalous, isn't it?" You know, and he's like, "What did you make for your last picture?" And she's like, $8.2 billion. And he's like, "Oh, well done." You know, he's just got these. He's got a few amazing scenes, and it was the young version of Lord Grantham, but he was really great.
Was he just like sort of a? Was he sort of just like a character actor before Downton?
I think he was totally just a British movie character actor.
Okay.
Which, speaking of. There's one British actor who I absolutely love, who I'd love to see, like, incorporated into the Downton universe. Maybe to fall in love with Matthew's mom, Cousin Violet, and that's Bill Nighy. Are you a Bill Nighy fan?
Oh, yeah. Remind me. Yeah, I mean, the name's in my head, but
dude,
I can't.
Dude, he's the old guy. He was in Love Actually. He was in...
Oh, right.
An old person movie called The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, which we loved.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, he would have been perfect in that.
Super charming, man. He could have been somebody's love interest. Dude, he could have been the Dowager Countess's love interest.
Yeah, is he? Yeah, he's old enough, right?
He's old.
Yeah.
He's about her age, man. Okay. He would crush that. He would absolutely crush that. But.
Dude, I mean, how hashtag blessed are we, dude, that Maggie made it through the entire, like, you know...
Dude, I love Mags.
Downton Legacy.
Dude, Mags was she was amazing in those Best Exotic Marigold Hotel movies too. Basically,
well, she's just amazing.
Basically,
she's just
playing the same person, like a really cranky but super clever old lady.
That's what's so fascinating is when you get to a certain age as an actor, you just literally get to play yourself from that point on.
That must be an amazing place to be.
Like, dude, like you ever see like if you ever watch like Robert Duvall now, it's like, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know that he's ever not just been Robert Duvall, you know?
Yeah, no,
like
you're
in
right.
Every movie.
Baby, you know what I'm thinking about? I'm thinking about how when this ep drops, there's going to be a large percentage of people who hate it. You know, like all the bro-y kind of dudes are going to be like, oh, eye roll, totally. You know, Ted and Ron talking. You know what's going to happen? They're going to clamor for Pipe's return, and it's going to make Pipe feel really good.
It's true.
Which is good. It's true. I like that for my friends.
Yeah.
You know?
Pipe's going to be hyped, man. Yeah, we're going to hype Pipe.
Well, just, yeah, you know? By nature of doing this, like, X number of people are going to hate it, and therefore, we're going to...
Do you think... How many people do you think are going to make it up to this point of us even talking about whether they're going to make it up to this point?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of want to move this to the beginning. And if Resonate Recordings actually listen to the episodes, we could have them move this up to the top. But
the problem is they're not even going to want to get to the end.
They're not going to get to the end. I think only
I think you still got to pump Dwell Bible App too. By the way,
yeah, I do, man. I'm going to do that quickly, and then I got to hop. But yeah, I don't know that a lot of people who are non-Downton people are going to make it this far. But Big R, I want to thank everybody for making it this far. So if you've listened through the entirety of the program and you enjoy Downton Abbey, we want to thank you for being a part of this discussion.
We mean the two senior citizens who've become Happy Rant fans in the last 2 years.
No, I love it, man. I love it. And we got to do shows that cater to them once in a while.
We do. We care about you.
That's what this has been. This has been us serving you and also us serving ourselves in the sense that this is what we wanted to talk about. But, baby, I want to talk about a sponsor that I really, really love. I know you love these folks, too. They do great media work in the area of like audio Bible reading. So it's the Dwell Bible app. We have worked with Dwell in the past. We're in a current long-term relationship with Dwell. I feel like we've moved past talking with Dwell and like we're actually dating. So like we're going out on it, like it's a standing thing Friday and Saturday nights. We don't even have to like set it up in advance that we're with,
100%.
We're just with Dwell and people know
we don't even have to talk anymore. We're just together all the time.
We're shouting it from the rooftops that we're with Dwell, and we're actually offering a special discount just for Happy Rant listeners. So if you go to dwellbible.io/happyrant, dwellbible.io/happyrant, you can get a 33% discount on your subscription to Dwell Bible. So Dwell Bible, what they do, they have all kinds of different listening plans where you can listen through the Bible in a year. You can have people of different like voice styles and nationalities read the Bible to you. I really love it because it sounds like the scripture readers at Tim Keller's church. You know how you listen to a Timmy K sermon and the reader is always like a like a guy who majored in theater 20 years ago in NYU.
I always feel like it's a teenage girl.
Yeah, or it's a teenage girl who's a current theater student in college.
Right.
And it's like somebody backstage told them, okay, read it, but with emotion. You know, with always with emotion, more emotion, you know.
Pretend like you're auditioning.
Yeah, pretend like this is Carnegie Hall and you're auditioning for the show of a lifetime, you know. So you can get that motif, or you can get like a boring guy reading it. And either way, it's a really great experience. I listen to Dwell. It's a great thing to just throw on in the car, in the bathroom as you're getting ready in the morning. And we love this product. So dwellbible.io/happyrant, 33% discount on subscription. And Ronald, we have come to the end. We've wandered to and fro. The one thing that connects me to Downton Abbey physically, I feel, and I know you're going to agree with this, is my bag. So our bag situation is akin to that of a character on Downton Abbey, I think, an upstairs character in terms of what we're...
Oh, it's definitely upstairs. Let's be honest.
Yeah, let's be honest. So in terms of what we're carrying around on our shoulders on a day-to-day basis, and I don't mean our responsibilities, I mean our dazzling $700 shoulder bags. So thank you to Saddleback Leather. Thank you to Dwell Bible. And until next time...
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Hey there, it's Nicole Eunice from the How to Study the Bible podcast, and I'd love to invite you to join us as we weekly discover a passage of God's Word together. From beginning to end, from principles to practicals, we are here to make sure that God's Word is powerful and relevant to your life. If that sounds like something you're looking for, I would love to invite you to subscribe. You can go to lifeaudio.com and search How to Study the Bible, and we'll see you there.